Namakundarata Kundigiri Govardhana Kija Vrindavandama Kija Turidama Kija Namadri Maya Kundama Kija Namadri Kija Gangamaya Juna Devi Kija Devi Kija Tosi Maharani Kija Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Kija Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Sri Prabhupada, Maha and Vishnu Praya. Krishna Prasad, Vitulay, Sri Mate Bhaktivinoda Swami Ji Yamani. Namaste, Saraswati Deve, Gauravani Pitani, Vasesa Srinivana Bhakta Jagasatam. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamavam Sri Guru Vaishnava Sri Rupam Sahagajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Samasthi. Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Vavita Sri Yashamana Vitamsta Manchakalpa Tribhischa Kibhisna Bhavata Patitanam Pavane Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So this is July, 28th? All right?
Yep.
July 28, 2016, in Simachalam, Germany. We're reading from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, text 37. Rishinam Vasudevosmi Pandavanam Dhananjaya Muninam Apyaham Vyasa Kavinam Ushana Kavi. Translation. Of the descendants of Vishnu, I am Vasudeva. And of the Pandavas, I am Arjuna. Of the sages, I am Vyasa. And among great thinkers, I am Ushana. Purport. Krishna is the original supreme personality of Godhead. And Baladeva is Krishna's immediate expansion. Both Lord Krishna and Baladeva appeared as sons of Vasudeva. So both of them may be called Vasudeva. From another point of view, because Krishna never leaves Vrindavan, all the forms of Krishna that appear elsewhere are his expansions. Vasudeva is Krishna's immediate expansion, so Vasudeva is not different from Krishna. It is to be understood that the Vasudeva referred to in this verse of Bhagavad Gita is Baladeva or Balarama, because he is the original source of all incarnations, and thus he is the sole source of Vasudeva. The immediate expansions of the Lord are called Swamsa, personal expansions, and there are also expansions called Vivinamsa, separated expansions. Amongst the sons of Pandu, Arjuna is famous as Dhananjaya. He is the best of men and therefore represents Krishna. Among the Munis, or learned men conversant in Vedic knowledge, Vyasa is the greatest because he explained Vedic knowledge in many different ways, for the understanding of the common mass of people in this age of Kali. And Vyasa is also known as an incarnation of Krishna. Therefore, Vyasa also represents Krishna. Kavis are those who are capable of thinking thoroughly on any subject matter. Among the Kavis, Ushana, Sukra Acharya, was the spiritual master of the demons. He was an extremely intelligent and far-seeing politician. The Sukra Acharya is another representative of the opulence of Krishna. Are you there to translate? Rishinam Vasudevosmi Pandavanam Dhananjaya Muninam Apyaham Vyasa Kavinam Ushana Kavi. Of the descendants of Vishnu, I am Vasudev, and of the Pandavas, I am Arjuna, of the sages, I am Vyasa, and of the great thinkers, I am Ushana. So the main point of this verse is that we can understand something about God by seeing the best example in any group. So among all of the thinkers, among all of the athletes, among all of the musicians, among all of the whatever, the best in that group gives us some idea, some representative of what is God. This is a way that we can also see God everywhere, because there's always the best in a particular group. And it's very interesting, if we look at ancient culture up to the present day, we find that groups of human beings are engaged in competition. So at least, whoa, now that does look like a heavy garland. Is this one actually heavy? The other one was so light. Even this isn't quite as heavy as it looks like. The other one was like air. So it used to be that the intellectuals in society would have debates in order to resolve philosophical difficulties and establish truth. Nowadays, we don't see that so much anymore. There's just sort of a disorganized debates on the internet, etc. But there's nothing organized where someone decides a winner. And of course, there were competition between politicians and governments. This still goes on in the form of negotiation and treaties and wars, and competition among business people and craftspeople, and competition among athletes and artists and musicians and so forth, to bring out who is the best. And by doing that, you keep a high level of quality in every area of society. Right? If you have debates, if you have competitions and contests, then it pushes people to a high level of quality. One of the problems with the communist governments is that they tried to stop this kind of competition in human society and say, okay, everybody's just the same. And the result of that was that human beings lost their drive and their initiative to strive to a high level of quality. So it's natural that we human beings celebrate the best. We were talking yesterday about how Krishna is victory. And here Krishna is saying specifically, among all these classes of people, here's the one who's the best, and that person represents me. Now, we shouldn't take that literally. In other words, Ushna, or Sukracharya, who's a great guru and thinker and poet among those who are demoniac, is not personally God. So when Krishna says, among the singers, I am this one who's the best, among the politicians, I am this one who's the best, among the dancers, I'm this one who's the best, it doesn't mean that that person is literally God. It's that that person represents for us, oh, God is the greatest poet. What do you mean he's the greatest poet? Oh, like this person. He's the best among the poets. God is the greatest poet. Oh, see this one who's the best in this family? That gives you some idea of God. The one who's the best in this thing? That gives you some idea of God. The one who's the best in this? That gives you some idea of God. Of course, interestingly enough, in this particular verse in the 10th chapter, the persons mentioned, at least in two of these four cases mentioned here, are literally God. So he's saying, I'm Vasudev, I'm Vyasa, I'm Arjuna, and I'm Sukracharya. So Sukracharya is not literally God. He's simply giving us an idea that God is the best. And even Arjuna is a living being. In the 4th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, where Arjuna said to Krishna, how is it you talk to the sun god? I don't really understand this. We're contemporaries. You know, you're saying you had a conversation millions of years ago. You know, if someone in this room said, yes, you know, millions of years ago I had a conversation with somebody, we'd say, that's a little unbelievable. So that's what Arjuna said to Krishna. And Krishna said, no, we were both there. And I remember, and you do not. And Srila Prabhupada writes in those purports that the living being, the small living being, is prone to forget, whereas God doesn't forget. So Arjuna here is not literally God, nor is Sukracharya. But the other two, Vyasa and Vasudev, are actual incarnations of God. So here when he's saying of the sages, I am Vyasa, he's saying that not figuratively, but quite literally. Vyasadeva, who compiled the Vedic literatures, who reorganized them at the start of this dark age, is indeed an incarnation of the Lord. I thought we could spend most of the time talking about Vasudeva. Srila Prabhupada spends half the purport talking about Vasudeva. So one might ask, well, why is Krishna saying, among the Rishnis, I am Vasudeva? That seems rather odd. It's like he's saying, I am me. You know? Among the people in this room right now, I am Urmila. Well, duh. That's pretty obvious. So Krishna is Vasudeva, the son of Vasudeva. So why is he saying among the Rishnis, I am Vasudeva? So Srila Prabhupada gives two possible explanations here. And after giving both explanations, he favors one of them. So we'll look at that in a moment. But let's look at his two explanations. The first explanation he gives is that Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. So therefore, Vasudeva Krishna must be his expansion. Now, of course, if we take it like that, we have a problem, because Krishna is speaking to Arjuna out of Vrindavan. So, the Krishna, the form of Krishna who's speaking to Arjuna is, again, Vasudeva. This is Vasudeva expansion. So we come back to exactly the same problem if we want to explain it that way. If we want to explain, well, that's me in another mood. But it's not, because that's the mood that Krishna's in. Oh, I needed that. Thank you. So another explanation is that here Vasudeva is referring not to Krishna himself, but to his brother Balaram, his brother, who's also the son of Vasudeva. Of course, Vasudeva had a lot of children. He had a lot more children than just Krishna Balaram. And so you could call any of those children a Vasudeva. But here, specifically, Prabhupada said he's talking about Balaram. Of course, even Balaram is, again, an expansion of himself. So let's look at this for a moment. And then we'll look at the logic Prabhupada's using here, which I think is very interesting. So the first is, we have in the Brahma Samhita the definition of God, Advaita Machyuta Manadi Mananta Rupa, that he has unlimited forms. And so this is a very nice philosophy, that God is one, there's only one God, and yet he has unlimited numbers of forms. Now, even we in this life, in this body, in one sense you could say we have different forms. When I'm angry, I look different than when I'm peaceful. Yes? Right? I was talking to one lady the other day who's getting to be about 40 years old. She's almost 40. And she said to me, you know, when I'm really concentrating on something, if someone takes a photograph of me, I look very old. And if I'm just smiling, I look very young. And I thought, you know, it's a fact. We have different moods. And in our different moods, we can look very different, isn't it? People can take photographs of you, and you're like, oh, that's a bad photograph. That's a good, you know. I mean, the same person can look really attractive in one photograph and really unattractive in another photograph. So in a sense, we sort of have different forms. But Krishna actually has unlimited forms according to his different moods. And Lord Kapiladev says in the third canto, that depending on how we want to reciprocate with the Lord, he will show us a different form. You know, we like that idea in this world. A person gets married and they think, the person I marry is going to become the ideal person for me. You know, it doesn't really happen. But with God, it's like that. With God, however you want to reciprocate with God, he'll answer you in that same mood. Yayatamam papatante tam sadaiva bhajamyaham. So he very much does that. And Krishna is called Akila Rasamrita Murti. He is the form of all different experiences, of all different flavors, of all different rasas. And this means each of his unlimited forms is exhibiting a particular combination of rasa. So when Krishna is in his Krishna, fully Krishna in Vrindavan, he has a little different mood than when he's in his Vasudev form. So although it's the same person, it's not a different person. But yet, he's displaying a different mood. I mean, another way we can understand this is we behave a little differently at home with our family than we do at work. Isn't that right? If you only know somebody at work, you don't know them completely. If you only know them at home, you don't know them completely. They'll show a different face, we say. They have a different face. So Krishna's displaying different aspects of himself. And then even more so as Balaram. So Krishna expands himself into different forms like Balaram. And Balaram is really fascinating. Because although Balaram and Krishna are the same person appearing as brothers, they sometimes have very different opinions. Now, again, we see something like that in ourselves. Sometimes I have two different opinions about the same thing. Do you ever have that situation? You feel two different ways about the same thing? You're like, well, you know, I sort of like it this way, but I also like it this way, and I think I could be happy with it that way. A lot of times people say, you know, what should you do with your life? And I think for most of us, there's 100 or 200 different things that we can do with our life, right? And we, well, yeah, I'd love to do this, and I could be happy doing that. And, right? So for Krishna, he takes a different form for each of those. He has one form that has one opinion. He has another form that has another opinion. And, you know, I argue with myself in my mind. He argues with himself, actually, arguing with himself. So Balaram says, no, Subhadra should marry Duryodhan. And Krishna says, no, Subhadra should marry Arjuna. And in that way, Balaram says, you know, we shouldn't have this battle of Kurukshetra. And Krishna says, yes, we should. So that's a very interesting relationship with each other. You know, how fascinating is that? That Balaram and Krishna have a relationship with each other. Just imagine if you could have, you know, an expansion of yourself that had a little different perspective on things. And that person was your best friend. You know, I mean, that's really fascinating. I think God is really fascinating. Of course, Srila Prabhupada makes a point that Krishna has Swamsa and Vibhinansa expansions. And guess who the Vibhinansa expansions are? Does anyone know who the Vibhinansa expansions are?
Elias.
And you are completely correct with your answer. Absolutely, yep. It takes all your energy just to figure out how to stay upright for a while. All right. Anybody have anyone except for Charu here have some idea about who the Vibhinansa expansions are? Anybody? All of us, we're the Vibhinansa expansions, the living entities. So we are also expansions of Krishna. Of course, we're very limited expansions of Krishna. We only display qualities of Krishna in a very minute degree. We don't have all the powers of God. But we're also his expansions, and each of us has a little different personality from everybody else. Isn't that fascinating? Just like even Krishna and Balaram display a little different personality. So each of us, as the Vibhinamsa expansions, also display a little different personality. And Krishna is relishing having a very particular individual and personal relationship with each of us, as we are relishing having an individual and personal relationship with him. So the last point I wanted to cover here is how Srila Prabhupada presents in this first paragraph two different ways of understanding the Vasudeva in this verse. And then he gives us the understanding that he prefers.
Yes.
So Srila Prabhupada instructed us many times that we should try to understand every verse of the scripture through many different angles of vision. You know, sometimes you meet people who say that they're just literalists, that they want to take the scripture and just understand the scripture literally. They think that when Bhagavad Gita says Bhagavad Gita as it is, that that means you take it literally. But we have a problem here, and our problem is that the word Vasudev, taken literally, could apply to about 70 different people, because that's about how many sons that Vasudev had. Who is it? Who is he talking about? So therefore, we're left with the question that there's more than one interpretation. There's more than one way to understand it.
Yeah.
And Prabhupada is saying, okay, here are at least two ways, and which way he prefers. Srila Prabhupada told us that we should study the scripture from many, many angles of vision. That was his instruction. Srila Prabhupada didn't say every verse has only one meaning. You should all memorize that one meaning and be able to just repeat it. He didn't say that. He said that you should become independently thoughtful and you should study the scriptures from many, many angles of vision. And especially to do this in the association of other devotees of the Lord. So that what we end up with is a very rich and nuanced and personal understanding of truth. Our philosophy is personalism. Our philosophy is that God is a person and that we are all individual persons. Persons are complex, persons are dynamic, and therefore their relationships are also complex and dynamic. The scriptures themselves are incarnations of the Lord, and our relationship with the scriptures are also personal and dynamic. So to summarize, Krishna was saying that among the Vrishnis, he's Vasudev, of the Pandavas, Arjuna, of the sages, Vyasa, and of great thinkers, Uchana or Sukracharya. In the case of Arjuna and Sukracharya, Krishna is pointing to the best among the group as a way to get some understanding of God as being the best. And when it comes to Vyasa and Vasudev, he was speaking very literally about incarnations of himself, that we understand these incarnations by knowing that although God is one, he has an unlimited number of expansions, various forms with different moods and different pastimes, and that in a similar way, we can understand the scriptures through different angles of vision, through our personal relationship with the scriptures. So anyone have questions or comments, or additions or subtractions?
Yes. Arjuna, you explained that he's like a living being, but still there are descriptions like Naranarayan, Krishna Arjuna, like Vishnu Tattva, you know?
I don't think that Arjuna is ever called Vishnu Tattva, although he appears as Narayana, he appears with Narayana. So just like Krishna and Arjuna appear, so Narayana appears. Now Arjuna appears along with Narayana, but he's not. At least I've never read that he particularly, he's always called Jivatama. Although he may be Shaktivesh. He certainly empowered you, he's not an ordinary Jiva. Does anyone else have any questions? We talked about having an open Q&A session in the evening, but if anybody has it, otherwise we can end early, that's no harm. But if anybody else has anything they'd like to bring up. Yes, please.
If it's an open Q&A, can I ask a question on the classes, the seminar you've been giving?
Sure, because we don't have much time in the morning for that.
Yeah. In one of the verses it says we have to give up dharma and adharma.
Yes.
I can understand. Giving up dharma, we're practicing Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. That's really what we are taught. And so in my mind, Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakta and Dharma are sort of the same. So my mind is telling me, how can you give up these things in Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti? Because that's what we do. So how should I internalize that? Giving up Dharma, but I think obviously still doing...
Okay, well there's at least three ways to understand giving up Dharma and our Dharma. The first way I discussed in the class, were you there that day when
I discussed that? Yeah, I was there.
So the first way you can understand it is that we don't have the abhiman, we don't have the identification of ourself as either a good or bad person. So generally people who do dharma means your pious good acts in the world. The reason that they're doing pious good acts in the world is that they identify themselves as good people. You know, they'll say, I am a moral, ethical, hardworking, responsible, honest person of integrity. Right? I mean, all the politicians say that about themselves, which is quite humorous, because probably none of them are like that, or they wouldn't get very far as politicians. But they make a point of saying that, don't they? Yes? Politicians particularly. They really make a point of getting up there in front of everybody. I am honest. I am good. I am righteous. Yes. And most people who do Dharma are doing it for that reason. I do good things because I am a good person. Because I have high standards of moral and ethical behavior. And most people who do bad things do it because they have a different kind of identity. They have an identity that I'm very clever and I'm able to break the laws and get away with it. You know, I can cheat on my taxes, I can park where I'm not supposed to, I can not be so honest in my dealings, and nobody catches me and I prosper. So those two mentalities need to be given up. One should not think that either I'm a very good person or that I'm a very bad person. We shouldn't be doing Dharma for that reason. So the devotees generally do Dharma. And I really mean generally. It's not always. For example, if you want to go preach in China, you're going to be violating the laws of China if you go to preach Krishna consciousness there. You're going to have to do it illegally. It's not legal for you to do it. You understand? I mean, they've just passed a law in Russia that you can't preach outside of a church. So if you're going to teach about Krishna consciousness in those places, you're going to have to be violating at least the law of that country. And devotees are willing to break the law like that for the sake of Krishna. Devotees are not absolute dharmists. But generally devotees follow Dharma because Dharma tu sakshat Bhagavat Pranita. The laws of ethics and morality are coming from God himself. It's God who says, don't lie, don't cheat, don't steal. Right? So generally devotees aren't going to lie, cheat, and steal, etc. Because that's what Krishna says to do. But they're doing it to please Krishna, not because they're a good person. Which may seem like a subtle difference, but it's a huge difference in terms of how we feel about ourselves and how other people will feel about us and our internal satisfaction. So that's the simplest and most basic answer. That giving up Dharma and Adharma isn't so much talking about the external behaviors, but it's talking about the self-identification. In other words, when we decide what we're going to do, if we decide, you know, well, am I going to answer my mail right now or am I going to go to sleep? Am I going to go to work today or not? Am I going to go to the temple in the morning or not? Am I going to move to Switzerland or France? When we're making these decisions in life, the way we make those decisions is we take an idealized form of ourselves. And we say, what would the idealized form of myself do? And that idealized form of ourself comes from this idea, well, what kind of a person am I? you know, if we say, well, I'm a wife. Okay, what would a good wife do? I'm a father. What would a good father do? I'm a German citizen. What would a good German citizen do? And part of that is I'm a good person or I'm a bad person. What would I do? So what one needs to do instead is say, I'm a soul. I'm part of Krishna. I'm Krishna's servant. I'm Krishna's employee. As a spiritual being who works for the Lord, what would I do? Now the answer to that question is almost always, not always, but almost always going to be the same as, I'm a good person, what would I do? Externally, you're not going to see a big difference between someone who thinks, I'm a good person, what should I do? And I'm Krishna's servant, what should I do? But the internal is quite different. Another way one can answer that question is that beginners in bhakti do have to follow the ordinary laws of ethics and morality, and those who are more advanced do not. That doesn't mean that those who are more advanced are unethical and immoral. It's that they're acting on a higher principle. So that's another answer. And a third answer, which is similar to the second one, is that when one is a self-realized person, one has no duties to do in the world whatsoever. One has no reason to do anything in the world, and one has no reason to give up anything in the world. So anything that a person chooses to do in the world is on the full platform of freedom. I'm sure there's more than three ways to understand that. Bhaktivinoda Thakur particularly gives the second way, that the beginners have to follow Dharma and the advanced devotees are following a different principle, a higher principle. I mean, a way to think about that is, let's say you're dealing with a company. I mean, in fact, this just happened to me. I had the towel I used for in my deity worship got wax on it, and so I needed to replace it. And it's a special towel. It's one used for travel by campers, so it's very absorbent and it dries very fast. And the only other place I could order a replacement was from America, unfortunately, because then it has to be shipped internationally, etc. So I ordered it on July 18th and still hadn't shipped. So I contacted the company, and the person that I spoke to was a very low-level employee. And she just repeated over and over again, international orders take a long time to process. We haven't processed orders from the 15th yet. So what the speaker from the 18th? You're just going to have to wait. Do you want to cancel the order? And that was all she could say. She couldn't say anything else. I said, can I talk to a supervisor? And she said, no, supervisors are not available through this format. So then I wrote an email, and I said, is there a supervisor I can write to? So she gave me the email of the supervisor. I wrote to the supervisor, and then I got back a notice, your item has shipped immediately. So the low-level employees have to just follow the rules, right? One of my sons told me, he said, Mata, whenever you're having a problem with the company, always go up two levels of supervisors. Says because the people at the lower level, they're not generally very intelligent or very trained, and all they can do is follow the script. They don't have the authority to make any changes, whereas people at the higher levels do. You all understand what I'm saying? You know, and if you get all the way up to the top level, you've got the people who make the rules for the company, and they can do whatever they want. So when you're dealing with people in spiritual consciousness, it's like that too. When somebody's just starting the spiritual journey, all they can do is say, well, this is what it says, and that's just what I have to do. And they can't apply anything. They don't really understand the principles of what they're doing. They don't know the purpose behind what they're doing. And so they don't know how to make changes for time, place, and circumstance. But as a person advances in spiritual consciousness, which may not have to do with number of years technically in the Hare Krishna movement. It's not necessarily that someone who's been 41 years in the Hare Krishna movement is on a higher level than someone who's been 39 years in the Hare Krishna movement. It doesn't quite work like that. But someone who's come to a higher level of spiritual consciousness, they have more of an understanding of what the laws mean, what the rules mean, and therefore they have a better ability to apply them. Also, they're given more authority by the Lord to make adjustments because they have the ability to do that intelligently. So in that sense, they're not just following a rule book of Dharma. They understand what the Lord's purpose is. A very funny example is when Srila Prabhupada started the movement in New York. So it was just him, and then it was just a handful of followers who knew practically nothing about Krishna consciousness. They were just completely new. And one time, Srila Prabhupada had a scheduled meeting with some very important men about the legalities of forming his society. I think his name was Mr. Price. And Srila Prabhupada had an appointment with him, and preparing for that appointment, he was cooking a very fancy meal. So he told one of his very, very, very new followers, he said, "I have an important meeting with a Mr. Price, and I'm cooking for the meeting. Please don't let anyone disturb me." So "don't let anyone disturb me" meant anyone except Mr. Price. It didn't mean anyone. So when Mr. Price came to see Srila Prabhupada, this very new disciple said, "He's busy, he can't be disturbed." And eventually Srila Prabhupada came and said, "Didn't Mr. Price come?" And he said, "Well, somebody came at 2 o'clock, but what happened?" "Well, I told him he didn't want to be disturbed." And of course, Prabhupada wasn't exactly very pleased. So somebody who's a beginner in spiritual life, they don't really understand the instructions of the Lord. They don't really understand the instructions of the saintly persons. They don't know how to apply them. They don't know how to use them. So one shouldn't stay on that platform. One should get to the point where you understand the spirit of the law, not just the letter of the law, and you can apply things intelligently. But even the beginner can give up the consciousness of "I am a good person and I am a bad person," and can immediately think, "Yes, I am working for Krishna. What would make Krishna happy?" Is that all right? By the way, Srila Prabhupada quotes that verse quite a lot from Manasiksha. Anybody else have any questions? Yes, Prabhu.
I'm quite surprised in your seminars how Raghunath Das Goswami knew about this different, like subtle deviations, like this urine of the S. And it is quite, I can see it nowadays, in our society, all these deviations, and I'm surprised how he knew it, like in his, because he was one of his Goswamis,
Well, of course, it was Bhaktivinoda in his commentary who describes all the details.
Okay.
So in Raghunath Das Goswami's verse, he's just giving it as a general thing. Bhaktivinoda is giving the details. Bhaktivinoda, of course, was a high court judge, and he was instrumental in forming small spiritual societies, not anything as organized as big or as ISKCON. So certainly he had experience with a wide range of spiritual practitioners. But Raghunath Das Goswami himself, before he became Raghunath Das Goswami, he was the only son of both his father and uncle. And they were tax collectors. And he was very educated in the ways of the world. He wasn't worldly and incompetent person. And he was certainly very familiar with the devotee community. It's said that his father and uncle used to regularly host Haridas Thakur, and they would have many meetings of Vaishnavas to discuss spiritual philosophies. And interestingly enough, Lord Chaitanya said that Raghunath Das, your father and uncle, they are beginning devotees. They are materialistic devotees. Which means that Raghunath Das Goswami had a lot of experience with devotees on many different levels. And of course, in Jagannath Puri for all those years, serving Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he also saw a wide variety of devotee practitioners of all different levels, with all different problems, and etc. I would think that that was the case even at Radhakund. The Goswamis are called Dira Dira Janapriyo, that the pious people and the impious people would come to them for advice. So I'm sure that even there, when he was much older and living at the bank of Radhakund, that he was dealing with a wide variety of spiritual practitioners. So it wasn't that he was cloistered. He wasn't just living in some cave away from the world and away from people.
One more thing.
Sure.
Regarding this Raganuga level, as you described, suddenly devotee starts to be attracted in particular moods or relationship with Krishna.
Yes.
All the time you are speaking about this Krishna in Vrindavan. So what happens when devotee starts to feel like attractive to the Sankirtan mission, the spreading of Krishna consciousness, like it's Chaitanya Lila, you know? Is it something that he's missing something?
No. Actually, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati said that some of the devotees exist in Chaitanya Lila, some exist in Krishna Lila, and some exist in both. And some are in Ram Lila, Chaitanya Lila, and Krishna Lila. Krishna expands himself unlimitedly, but the liberated soul can also expand himself. Not unlimitedly, like God in every atom, but in many different manifestations. So you could have one role in Chaitanya Lila and another role in Krishna Lila. Bhaktisiddhanta said that some devotees are only in Lord Chaitanya's Lila, some only in Krishna's Lila, and some in both.
She would like to ask if you can say a little bit about how you met Srila Prabhupada.
Not now. That's too long.
Can we ask some questions related to education?
Yeah, I'll just go for another 5 minutes, but sure.
So one of the questions is how to manage these teenagers.
That's another. Then you're asking another. She had a question that was a two-hour class, and that one was a two-hour. That's too big of a question. If you want to make it a little smaller, can you boil it down?
Yeah. Just some hints how to behave to them so they can stay in Krishna consciousness.
I have a whole seminar on that, you see, so... I think the main thing we want to do with our children is engage them according to their propensities and their natures, give them some meaningful service to do, be their friend. Yes?
How can you switch to be a friend from being the friend who says everything but to him, and then switching at age 14 or I don't know how?
Well, I don't know if parents ever switch completely, you know, which is why sometimes it's a good idea that adults other than the parents are involved. I mean, I remember when my brother-in-law came to visit me at the New York Temple. This is a long time ago. And my sisters were much, much older than me. So... let's see, how old must he have been at the time? He must have been in his 50s at that time. So he was visiting New York City where I was. And he came to see me at the Sunday feast, and his mother called, and he's talking to his, or he told me his mother called him earlier. And he said, yeah, you know, he said, my mother told me, make sure you don't get home too late, because he was staying in his mother's house while he was in New York, and make sure you wear a sweater, you know, a jumper. And he said, Mom, I'm like 55 years old. So I think to some extent that doesn't go away. I mean, I remember also when I... when we went to India, our oldest son was in the Gurukul there. This would have been in 86. And we were taking our daughter, who at that time was 7. And I remember my mother calling me and saying, make sure you pack warm clothes for your child. You know, Mom, this is my second child. And even with my first child, I knew that I should pack different clothes when I go on a trip. So... I think to some extent that even when you get to be, you know, in your 40s and 50s and 60s, your parents still tell you what to do like you're a little child sometimes. So it's sometimes nice to have other people involved. But there's an African proverb, it takes a village to raise a child. So it's sometimes good if the teenagers can do some meaningful service with some other adults in the community that are more likely to treat them like adults. One of the most valuable things you can do for the teenagers is have someone treat them like an adult and have them do something that's actually valuable and meaningful on an adult level. I think one of the huge harms of our modern society is that we think that kids should go to school until they're like 25 years old before they can do anything meaningful with their lives. It's sort of absurd. You see this particularly in the Asians, where, you know, they want their kids to go to school all day, and then after school, and then after school, and then after school, and all the kids ever do is study. And they don't do anything meaningful. I think Germany's been one of the leaders in the world in terms of apprenticeship programs and engaging young people in practical vocational work at a young age, much more so than most other Western countries. But it is one of the real downsides of the modern society. You know, it used to be that you could get a good job if you dropped out of secondary school, and then you had to get a secondary degree. Then you had to get an undergraduate degree, and now you practically have to get a master's degree. So you talk to people again, especially people from the Asian countries, and they'll say, no, you know, my kids can't get married until they have their master's degree. They can't get a job. So this is sort of insane. And, you know, I know we ran into a problem at our temple in London because of the child labor laws, that if you wanted your kid under 16 to help and do some service at the temple, it was against the law. Wow. You're having a program on Sunday, you're having a big feast on Sunday, and you want your 12, 13-year-old kid to be there helping for the feast, and they'll say, sorry, this is illegal. So that, I realize we should have child labor laws and we shouldn't have the kids in the factories for 12 hours a day. I understand the purpose is to protect the children, but it starts to become, the protection starts to be a harm to them. By the time you're 11, 12 years old, what to speak of 13, 14 years old, you want to do something that's valuable and meaningful. Natural desire within the human being. Well, you're not allowed to do anything valuable and meaningful. Wow. It's against the law to do anything valuable and meaningful until you're at least 16. Just play games and go to school. Yes.
What's the best source where to download your lectures or seminars?
Iskan Desire Tree. Also, I have two websites. So my main website is UrmilaDeviDasi.org, And I have their video classes, also links to my audio classes. And then I have romiladasi.com, where I have a blog. But pretty much all my audio is on ISKCON Desire Tree. But if you go to my website, you'll find links to the video classes also. Okay, is there anything else? Is that it? Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.